Getting Zen with Gen Z. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring you to live your happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. Today I have a returning guest with me, Dr. Nikki Elioe. She's a gynecologist and a good friend of mine, client. She was on episode 3. I had her on talking about what is a healthy V, a healthy vagina, if you guys remember that one. I know that's probably a very memorable episode. Today I have Dr. Nikki coming in over the phone lines. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
Of course. I said in the beginning, and I said on our first episode, that you were going to be a regular because you obviously have a lot of insight and information. So you are a fabulous resource for us to have. So thank you.
And I'm happy to share.
Excellent.
So happy to share.
So, you know, we did have a little more of a, you know, serious talk, but a little more lighthearted in our first podcast. And, you know, I really wanted to, and you and I had discussed this as one of the future topics, and I think it's just kind of the right timing now with a lot of current events that have kind of happened. But today, for you listeners, we really want to address the topic of domestic violence and abuse. And, you know, Dr. Nikki is a perfect person to have on to kind of give some insight. You know, she's a doctor servicing the Lake Forest and Waukegan area. What is the facility that you're at right now?
I'm currently at William E. Woods MD practice. It's in Park City, technically kind of a small suburb out of Waukegan.
Okay.
So yeah, been there for about a little over two years now as well.
Okay, perfect. And we'll definitely give people your email at the end, just so they can reach out with any questions after all the information. But I want people to, you know, be able to get in touch with you if they have questions and such. But I know, you know, you were in last week, and, you know, I think we had thought about this topic, obviously, as a very important topic way back when. But when we talked last week, you know, with the recent tragedy of Mercy Hospital and, you know, the fact that there was a life taken of a police officer, a doctor and pharmaceutical assistant, and, you know, topics kind of leading up that this was a domestic abuse situation with this doctor. You know, and obviously with the Me Too movement, there's been so much going on, you know, with this topic. So I know it's something that you feel is important for us to kind of shed some light on.
I do. I think this is one of those topics we had briefly discussed. You had kind of mentioned how close you were to your family, your sister, your mom, and how you guys have very open conversations about probably anything. And for me, when we were talking about, hey, what's the next topic? It was a couple of things that were happening in the news. I think at the time, the Bill Cosby verdict was about to be read. I think, as you mentioned, the whole Me Too movement thing has been going on for a while. Mm-hmm. And then in addition, this last Mercy shooting, which those of you who are not familiar, there was a shooting, I want to say within the last week, maybe even two, in Mercy Hospital, which is a hospital on the southern side of Chicago, where a physician was apparently having some type of altercation with her ex-fiance and apparently opened fire. I think the other two people that were killed were probably innocent bystanders or trying to help of some sort. I don't have the specific details. But again, nonetheless, the situation that escalates, and then you have people at your job or your work or sometimes strangers or sometimes friends that say, oh my gosh, I never knew anything like that was ever going on.
Yes.
And I guarantee you the same thing is happening. And, you know, what happens behind closed doors, it's very, can be very traumatic and be very serious. And we have no clue. You know, people smile every day. Hey, how you doing? I'm great. How are you? How's the weekend? How's the kids? However, they're going through a lot of difficult things behind closed doors and may not know how to reach out, may not know what to say, who to call, or even how to get out.
Well, I think
so. Therefore, we thought.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hello. No. So therefore, you know, we thought it'd be a good topic to kind of review, discuss, and kind of at least have an open dialogue.
Absolutely. And I think there's so many factors, obviously, that go into us not knowing what's going on. You know, I think fear is obviously a huge one for our lives or those people that we are taking care of or protecting ourselves, if it's, you know, family or children or, you know, whoever it may be. But, you know, and I know we're going to talk about how we can kind of break the stigma a little bit and spread awareness and share stories, just because that can be such a helpful tool to other people going through the situation. But as a, you know, a doctor and a gynecologist specifically, I'm sure you see, you know, you have a lot of patients that come in that may or may not open up to you, but you've seen signs that abuse is going on. So how do a lot of us, if we're not necessarily the ones going through it, what kind of signs should we be looking for? Yeah.
So that's a very good question, Jen. And the, to answer that, I see probably, say, anywhere between 20 and 25 women a day for various reasons. Some pregnant, some not, some just general problems. One of the red flags for me is if I see you for a similar issue, what I feel is too many times. For example, I have this discharge or sex is painful for me, right? I have patients that come in and tell me that, and then come in like a week later with some other vague complaint, and then a week later with another vague complaint. That starts to raise my little alarm systems of what exactly is happening.
Right.
And what it at least caused me to inquire. Okay. And that is not always true, but it's something that at least is always on my radar as a physician. The second aspect is also during one part of an annual exam. I think we kind of discussed this before in the Healthy V, like, hey, what is that? Or what is like multiple components of it? A lot of it is preventative care. But another thing that we are kind of challenging and the way the medical system is heading is to regularly, routinely screen for domestic violence and depression, right? Mental illness is also another one that's not really very well welcomed in our communities and things of that nature. So we are taught that every time, and I remember having people look at me like I had two heads. What do you mean? Am I safe at home? It's just a question. And sometimes what I go into is, you know, some things I don't know unless I ask, and I never assume anything about anyone.
Right.
So if your answer is yes, you're happy and healthy, great. And then I think we can move on. But if it's not, then it's my job to kind of identify some things that we can possibly start to change and start to develop a plan or something, or at least reach obtainable goals, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's goal, to be honest, Jen, is not the least, to be perfectly honest.
Which
some people, I know that's probably hard to hear, but everyone's goal is not to leave.
Well, I mean, I think that's so different if you're not experiencing it. You know, like we talk about that fear, or obviously you love that person, or you might not be confident enough. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of factors that tie in. And I think depression or low self-esteem, all of that ties in with with the domestic abuse as well. And that partnership and that relationship.
But Jen, I'm going to read you some of the most common things. And another thing I should point out, people, I shouldn't say disabilities. I need to find a better word. But when I say that, I mean like pregnant patients, older patients, or even children. So anyone that is dependent, maybe is a better word for it.
Okay.
Those are higher likelihoods to be abused. So autistic patients, mentally retarded patients, things of that, things like that. Yeah, you're more likely, probability wise, to be abused, because it's almost like an abused dog. You can't really say anything.
Right.
You can't say someone's hurting me.
You can't really be the best advocate for yourself.
Exactly. Fear is a very common one, as you've already mentioned. Believing the abuse is normal. And that's when it's kind of a self-esteem type thing versus what that particular person has witnessed, either their parents or whoever raised them do or treat, you know, whatever models of quote unquote love that you have.
Oh, yes.
Some people think it's normal. If he hits me, that means he loves me.
Right.
Or if she hits me, that means she loves me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's also what they normalize or what they've rationalized in their mind to be normal because of what they've had to cope with. So I will say, I think life experience is also drastically. They also say because of the embarrassment or shame. Low self-esteem, which I kind of think ties into the believing it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Love, cultural reasons or religious reasons, sometimes immigration status, like we're definitely in that kind of era right now, too. the area I live in, I probably practice maybe let's say 15-20% of Hispanic population, some of which are, I don't want to say not necessarily undocumented, but it was that the DREAM Act, I believe it is, something like that, or along those lines, where they are really fearful of, hey, what will happen to me if I don't allow this? Or what will happen to me if I do say something? Because they realize getting deported to their country is worse than the situation that they're in now, which sounds horrible.
Right.
But,
oh, my gosh.
And then, of course, the financial aspect. You know, it's one thing to be a self-support or financially supporting yourself. It's another thing to be married and have children or other things that you depend on. And some people, even though they know this is wrong, they will endure that for what they consider a better outcome for their children or whatever is most important to them.
Absolutely.
So they balance that.
I mean, and I understand, you know, those situations, you know, and I think fear kind of ties into all of it. Just because, yes, if these, you know, people going through these situations, they think, well, am I going to be out on the street with nothing? That's a worse alternative than the abuse that I'm taking at home, you know, which is so unfortunate to think that those are somebody's choices, you know, or options.
It's almost like choosing between worse and worst. That's not a word.
but yeah, you're exactly right. You know, so it's like you're kind of in a rock and a hard place. And obviously that's no good quality of life either way. And living in a situation like that to continue through that abuse, whether it be verbal or, you know, physical.
And that's I'm glad you mentioned that too. That is another probably misnomer that people just think all abuse is physical. It doesn't have to be. So physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, even kind of sometimes financial abuse, right?
Absolutely.
And I was, I'm reviewing this website, and this one I will link at the end. It's a national domestic hotline website, but it's a very good one. And even the way they define abuse or domestic violence, also they call it like intimate partner abuse, which kind of really is probably more politically correct for all situations and couples. But it's a pattern of behaviors more than anything. Used by one partner to maintain power and control over another partner, which probably encompasses every aspect of abuse that we know.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a very accurate definition. But it's mainly the power and control,
right,
whether that's controlling you by manipulating your thoughts, right, or controlling you emotionally so that you don't do something, controlling you physically by kind of physically abusing you, or sexually. Like, and that's the one I kind of run into. Sad story. I ran into a young girl. She was 20 years old. And again, right, she presented to me, I feel like, the fourth time. And I had only been living in Chicago less than, let's say, 6 months or 8 months.
Okay.
And it's the fourth time I've seen this young woman for an STD screening. Pause. What's happening? What's going on? No one needs to be screened for STDs that often. Who are you having sex with that willingly, right? If it's even willingly, that you would be that concerned.
Right.
Long story short, she told me about a scenario where she was raped in a bathroom at a club. Her parents knew about it. They sat down, they talked to the young man and his parents, but they didn't want to press charges because what it meant for his life. It was a lot. And I was just like, wait, whoa. It's one thing. It's almost like similar to that Cosby incident. It's one thing to actually endure this type of thing. It's another thing for your parents or any, you know, authoritative figure who's supposed to protect you to tell you, no, don't let him reap the consequences of his actions. No.
Wow.
I think that's multiple layers of things that this poor little girl is going to have to go through, because on so many levels, it's not fair.
Well,
and on so many levels, nor do I think she is mature enough to even go there. Because I don't even know if I'm mature enough to go there.
Well, to make that right decision at such a young age, and you know, you can never know and judge what the circumstances are. But like that decision, it's, you have to kind of think about, what if this person does this to somebody else?
Right. Exactly.
You know?
And not only that, they were young. For whatever reason, I feel like I don't know if they knew each other in that way. I don't think they were like family friends or anything, but uh-huh. enough to where parents are sitting down having conversations. That's a lot.
I absolutely. I mean, to sit down and be and confront the person that did this to your child.
To confront your accuser. Yes.
Wow. That's a lot to take on.
But something like that. But what my red flag was, she just came to my office too many times for something that I just, it's not common. I don't like to use the thing normal and abnormal. It's not mm-hmm. common for mm-hmm. someone to need that type of screening.
And these were probably cries for her to want to open up. Because you said on the first time, didn't really open up about it. But it's finding that, I think, trusted source in person. And sometimes it's outside of family, you know, and I think that's something important for us to understand is that we really want to be able to help somebody that we're close to if we see these signs and know that something's going on. But I think coming from us sometimes, it's a little bit more difficult for the person to, you know, to listen. So I think maybe finding another trusted source or facility or somebody that person can talk to, it's a little bit easier to have someone outside that emotional kind of, you know, bubble.
It is. And I will say from the family's perspective too, it is hard to watch someone you love endure that and not be judgmental about it. It's hard.
100%. Absolutely. It's hard to detach from that when you see someone going through all these emotions and it's like, why don't you just leave? You know, I don't understand that, but there's so much that person has mm-hmm. probably endured that they're not even sharing with you. It's just mentally, those are scars that are kind of left behind and it's hard to just, you know, make that decision to leave.
Exactly. And I think it's like you paint a beautiful picture in that it is scars that have to heal and most things don't heal overnight. So everything has a process. You get a bruise, it kind of turns dark purple before it turns green and then it starts to heal. But people have to also realize where they are and where they want to be. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. And I think ultimately it's the person's, you know, decision along with help from others, obviously, but I think you need to be your best advocate at times. And, you know, it's never a choice that you would make to be in a situation like this. And that is not how I want that to come across. But ultimately, sometimes making that decision to be like, I'm going to survive this or I'm going to, mm-hmm. you know, stay. I think we have to find that within ourselves to be like, okay, you know, I'm just going to push forward and make the decision to survive and make the best choices I can for myself. Because ultimately, I think if we look at what's going to happen, if we look at our fears, what's mm-hmm. the worst that can happen? And if I stay, and what's the worst that can happen if I leave? And I think if you kind of look at those, you know, staying may be the worst choice.
It's the easier short term. Like you said, we just had a snowstorm. Hey, if I leave, I have no place to go. The easiest short term, but it's not the easiest long term. I agree with you. Long term, if it gets really bad, like long term, it's going to kill you in some way, whether that is physically or whether that's kind of more of a spiritual person type thing. Mm-hmm. We've all seen people to where you've like known them for years and you see the light leave their eyes. Now they're still here as physical beings, but they're not who they were. Mm-hmm. And they probably, I won't say never, it would be very hard for them to return to that place with everything they've been through. It's almost like the innocence of a child once that's stripped and taken away from them.
Definitely.
You can't get that back. So that part is hard. Another thing about that website that I mentioned is they actually do have a little segment or a little piece of why do people abuse and things like for the abusers as well. Mm-hmm. And they kind of make it very much known that no matter what happens, why it happens, it's never okay. But they do kind of go into how abuse is a learned behavior and sometimes is how they've seen it in their own families and things of that nature. And they kind of dive into trying to get these people help to determine why they abuse so that they can attack that issue and no longer be an abuser.
Wow.
I have, which I think is totally kind of, wow, you know, well, very well-rounded, because most of the time it's very much focused on the victim.
Of course. And I mean, as it should be, but if we want to kind of help this epidemic as a whole, you know, I think it's very important to address the fact that, you know, if these people, there's resources for these people to, you know, get help as the abuser and to stop this pattern or chain of events. And I think that's just as important to know that there's that support there. And I real quick want to, as we kind of keep referencing this website, for all you listeners out there, and I'm going to include this in the description as well, but it's thehotline.org. So it's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And these are all the resources that Dr. Nikki is talking about. So,
And another quick thing too, like if you're really in an unsafe arrangement or environment, it does, the first thing that pops up is how to erase this from your browser and how to get rid of this on the screen if ever you're in a case of immediate harm.
Yeah, that's a really interesting feature on here. Right at the top, it just clicks up all in red. Because if you are in this situation, obviously, and you're fearing for your life, you don't want your abuser to necessarily see this on your computer. And there's an option to be able to delete it so that they can't find it in the browser history. Yeah.
So, yeah, the only other thing I was going to mention, because they mentioned this piece about the abusers, but that I've been to a couple of domestic violence kind of presentations or kind of brunches, that sort of thing, fundraisers, but I've never heard from an abuser though directly. And I think it would be an interesting perspective to see what, because I'm assuming if you're speaking at one of these type of events, you've completely turned your life around, but what it was that caused you to A, recognize you were doing something that was wrong, B, how you identified and cope with that, and how you made those changes.
Right.
I look at it like a disease as well. I look at it kind of like I look at alcoholism and addiction, which is the best way I can rationalize it.
Right.
I like to think all people are good and that nobody really wants to do these things. And that's just a choice that I personally make.
Yeah.
But I'm totally curious as to kind of their state of mind as well when these things are going on, because I don't think that people were born this way all the time. I think it's something you've seen or something that was taught to you, or someone hurt you in a way that you either A, can't cope with, can't deal with, and this is how you deal with it.
And I think a lot of that does come up where there is a family member or somebody that at one time that person was a victim themselves.
Yeah. Oh, very frequent.
Or
very
witnessed
frequent.
It, and then
that happens.
You know, you see that it can either go, it can go either way. You know, unfortunately, they may fall in line with that, and that's all they know, and that's what they do, not necessarily by choice, but, you know, that's...
Right, but
that's,
by familiarity.
Right,
and
exactly.
You're right about that. The fear of the unknown is what I think, even outside of domestic violence type things, is what I think... binds a lot of people. You know, people don't want to explore, go places, go to things, see things, try things that they don't know what that is. But not knowing is the only fear they have. It's not that it's good or bad. I just don't know.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a different perspective to look at it. I mean, I don't see a lot of these, you know, the perspective of that person. And obviously in these situations or talks, you know, when you were hearing from victims, to hear about somebody, you know, that has kind of turned their life around from an abuser.
I know. I've never heard of one. And honestly, this website is the first, just made me think about it when they had that little segment, because I was like, huh, I would have never thought, because truthfully, most of us, it's just kind of the anger inside of you don't really care about that person.
Well, right. And that's
honest.
Just being honest. Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
whatever.
The reality. Exactly. You know, someone's hurting somebody and you think right away, obviously, like, you know,
exactly.
You have anger towards that person, and we know it's not right. Nobody would ever condone that. But, you know, that person on a separate situation needs to obviously get, you know, some help for themselves.
Yeah.
So
the last thing I want to mention before we dive into probably more of things we can do or kind of solutions that we can do, was one of the things on the website also points to healthy relationships, And then they kind of go to unhealthy relationships, and they're kind of been read as abusive relationships. So also recognizing that all of this is on a spectrum, and not any one thing is going to mean that your sister's being abused, right? I have patients from a cultural perspective who comes in and their husbands speak for them. Now, I've noticed this across the same culture, so I don't feel like it's more abusive. I just feel like that is just how traditionally they are raised and taught that this is how they do, right? You have a husband, it's ironic because it's usually like, hey, the person having pain is usually a pregnant patient with pain. And I never understand how the husband is trying to describe a pain that the wife is having because you're not having the pain.
Right,
but
right.
In their culture, that is how it's kind of dictated. When they call me on the phone, as far as like when I'm on call, it's the same thing. They're very pleasant. They kind of want to know what you do for my wife and, hey, my baby. Like, they're very concerned about the well-being of their family, too. Mm-hmm. But that one instance, looking at it the wrong way, you could think that that's an abusive relationship too, which I wouldn't necessarily agree. So it's very important to know that the control is not it's something that's not welcomed as well.
Right.
But they kind of go through the healthy spectrum versus abusive spectrum and things of that nature.
I like this
and
as
most
a
importantly,
resource.
What I kind of,
I mean, that's good to understand, you know, it's like, what is a healthy relationship? And, you know, if you're questioning, if you don't know or you feel uncomfortable, you know, this is definitely something good to look at because some things we do normalize so much and it's like, well, wait a minute.
Right.
That's not okay.
Exactly. For example, they mentioned healthy relationships, of course, all the things, communicating, respectful, trusting, honest, equal, like those sort of things. Mm-hmm. Unhealthy is kind of disrespectful, dishonest, right? I may lie to you about something, but they don't necessarily consider that abusive, which I agree. Like, there are certain things that are just an unhealthy relationship versus it's not abusive,
but it's
just not good for you.
Right,
exactly.
Right,
so
right.
They are kind of red flags. The abusive one kind of completely denies anything that you're saying. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. It's like, come on, like, we were in an argument 20 minutes ago. No, we're not. Like, you know, just obvious things that everyone would say, that the sky is blue and you think it's purple. Mm-hmm. Really?
Right.
That sort
well,
of thing.
And those are the relationships, where you end up feeling like you, and I don't like
one.
This word, yes, but the crazy one.
And you're the crazy one.
Wait a minute. But after such a long period of time, you start questioning yourself, you know, which that's where I think then is, you know, the problem.
Of course. But moving on to probably ways to support yourself or support these people in your life, if you know of them. Mm-hmm. One, I think, as far as support is to try to maintain a non-judgmental attitude, which is maybe even take work on your part.
100%.
Is hard. You know, that's hard to walk in a situation for someone you love and you know, you want to give the world to or you think deserves the world. Mm-hmm. And they are accepting this, you know, type thing. And it's hard not to come off that way.
Yes.
So recognize that they probably often feel that way with some of the people that, or the person that is supposed to make them feel the most special, if you will. Mm-hmm. So coming from you two is just like another slap or another, you know, lapping it up.
Right.
Because that's, again, just another relationship that's, okay, well, maybe this is all. She's right. Like, okay, mm-hmm. type thing. So try not to be listen with an open mind and also allow, it's not like a one time type thing. Like this person, they're not going to get it right on the first, second, third, or maybe fourth time. Mm-hmm. You think about how long it takes an addict to truly stop drinking, smoking, whatever they're doing, whatever their addiction is. It's usually not the first and second time, third or fourth.
It's going to take multiple times.
It takes time. It does. It takes multiple times and effort. I think it's okay to have your boundaries. It is okay for you to cope with, you know, what you can live with, though, too, and create your boundaries, have private conversations. I think it's important to have intimate, private moments, whether that's brunch, lunch, or whatever, just as you build a relationship and a rapport. It doesn't always have to be we're talking about the problems of life either, but
you know,
just letting that person know that you're there.
That's a very good point. I think it's important just to, because sometimes you know, when a person is going through this, to hear about it constantly, like they're living it constantly. And we know that it's going to kind of take time for that person to make the decision or the choice. I'm ready, you know, to do this and leave. And I have this courage. But I think as being that support system, it's just letting them know that you're there. You know, you're there, you're building them up, you're building up their confidence and their courage, and just creating that loving relationship and that trust so that they know that you are there for them no matter what, you know, no matter what decision they're going to make or what they're going through, you are there as a support. And it doesn't always have to be about that situation, because then, you know, I think they realize that, you know, they're not being judged. It is okay. They can turn to you for anything. And that's what you kind of want. You want them to be able to turn to you when they're really in need.
Exactly. And I think that's so important on so many levels. To be able to truly be able to connect with individuals, I'm such a big sap. So I think the most important thing that we have, I think the most important things we have on this earth is the relationships we form. I think it fuels everything else that we could ever obtain. And truly, I think everything that you would obtain is, it's almost useless without healthy, beneficial relationships.
Absolutely.
So you're right. Like, to be able to connect with, and you really don't get that many people in a lifetime that you can really connect in that manner, who would truly love you no matter what, who would truly be there for you no matter what. So I do think that if you have those people in your life, then of course you can connect with them on different levels and different things, but it's okay just to let them know that you support them no matter what. You're going to be there no matter what. Right. I'm going to reference a movie because I also want to just mention kind of how it ended, because which was that Enough movie with Jennifer Lopez. And it kind of touched on kind of a lot of things that we had already discussed. You know, so she was a waitress. He was a very influential businessman. I don't know. I forget exactly what he did. Swooped her off her feet. You know, they get married. They have a child. And then she learns he's starting to cheat. She confronts him about it. And the man that she had no clue smacks her. After you're confronting your husband about sleeping with another woman, slaps her. She's appalled. And then you kind of get a fast forward of the story that this kind of scenario continues to happen with different situations. He makes it seem like it's her fault, that she's cheating, that he's cheating, which is kind of, and then her best friend finds out about it, who also used to work at the diner with her. And then I believe it's some type of father figure as well. Now they, same thing, you got to leave, you got to leave, he's going to kill you, right? Same thing. But they were always there until she was ready to leave. Her daughter is now like 5 or 6 years old. And again, her reason for not leaving is because he kept telling her he would keep her child. You would never get custody. These are real life situations. And she has no resources the way he does. So fast forward, she finally gets out. She goes through this intense kind of training, of which you can probably comment on how people could achieve such rigorous training. But she did, and eventually kind of the movie ends with her confronting her husband for the final time and him again trying to actually end her life, but her actually surviving the incident. But I say all this to say that that movie kind of summarizes, or at least hits a lot of high points of what some people live every day. It's a fast forward of a lot of it, but it's what some people live every day. But I did want to kind of touch on different ways that people can at least protect themselves, right?
This is very important.
You to kind of comment on that.
Well, and I kind of want to say too, you know, obviously, you know, if you feel like you're in a situation, I mean, calling 911 is always the, you know, if you are able to, is
of course
the number one thing you want to do. Just, you know, we don't want try and take matters into our own hands. I mean, sometimes we have to, but if we can call 911, you obviously want to be able to do that, you know, as quickly as you can if you feel like you're in danger, for sure.
Of course. And even though, okay, this website again, I'm sorry, but even the website,
it's
it kind of unfortunately
website.
Even kind of told you certain positions to kind of be in if you felt, if it was going to be imminent and kind of the best thing to safely protect your internal organs and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is where obviously, you know, I would throw jujitsu in the mix.
Of course.
You know, and there's, and I'm going to have a few people on in the future talking about self-defense. And, you know, sometimes there's, I don't want to say gimmicks, spreading self-defense is amazing, obviously, because we want to spread awareness. But obviously training mm-hmm. something and getting reps of things and practicing those situations and being put in, uncomfortable situations and learning how to get yourselves out of them. That's something that's very, important to get practice in and to help build confidence and help build the mind and the body. So many different things, but I'm obviously a huge advocate of learning jujitsu if you can, boxing, whatever it may be, but jujitsu is truly important because you learn to be very strong in one of the most vulnerable positions, which is being on your back. So learning how to kind of escape and get out of the situation. Sometimes we're not always going to be able to strike a person. It's very hard to, you know, to hit somebody, but when they get very close, especially in a sexual assault situation, they're closing the space. Mm-hmm. And that's where jujitsu comes in handy because you really learn how to escape that or how to basically, the closer somebody gets, you can, you know, choke them out if you need to, or, you know, learn how to break arms or manipulate joints and things like that. And sometimes you have to get violent. You need to bite. You need to eye gouge, you know, certain things like that to hit, you know, groin strikes, anything you can to obviously get away, scream, you know, whatever it may be. But jujitsu and learning that and practicing it, you're learning to be so strong in a very vulnerable position. So, everybody can always reach out to me with any questions about that or areas or places, you know, locations of where they can train or try classes out. They can always go to my website, jenzanotti.com, and, you know, reach out, obviously, with any questions of that and some guidance. But, you know, I think that's something that also really boosts your confidence and courage to help in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm. And not feel so weak and powerless. I think when you can get to take back your power, first time that happens, I'm sure it's a very unfamiliar feeling, mm-hmm. but at the same time, very much a positive feeling.
Absolutely.
You know, to always be helpless, and then all of a sudden, like, hey, have the tables turn.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably quite embracing.
It's very empowering and, you know, mentally, mm-hmm. obviously, as well as physically. But sometimes we can't get this physical training in. And I think being able to talk to people such as yourself or therapists or social workers, I know, we don't always get that stuff covered by insurance. But I think being able to, I know when I was going through my divorce, and that was not a, you know, physical abuse situation. But there were mm-hmm. Just some, I'd say, verbal, you know, situations and just not understanding kind of where I was coming from or miscommunication and things. And I, you know, didn't want to feel like that crazy person. So I started seeking therapy on my own privately, just mm-hmm. to get a little insight and kind of feel like, okay, I am strong. Like I'm not, you know, crazy. I am sane. Like these things are not okay, or it's okay that I'm feeling this way and recognizing that. So I know, you know, there are a lot of clinics and free services too, where people can go if they don't have, you know, the financial ability to be able to pay for that, or their insurance doesn't cover it, or they don't have insurance. But I think talking about it and having that outside person that can truly help, therapists and counselors, mm-hmm. I think it's so important.
I agree. And they can be, they're designed to be objective, mm-hmm. right? A good therapist, just as you said, will actually allow you to answer your own questions over time. Like, they're not going to impose their opinions.
Oh,
they help
for sure.
you find the answers that you need, which I think is amazing.
Definitely.
And I don't think enough people actually tap into that aspect, right? I don't think they tap into it at all, which is why one of our initiatives, as far as like the wave of physicians and such, is like I said, domestic violence, but including depression, anxiety, kind of screening every time too, because it's well underdiagnosed.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, so, people know they have those resources out there to, mm-hmm. be able to just talk. People want to be heard, you know, and in a mm-hmm. safe, trusted environment. And I think that's absolutely beneficial to be able to get some clarity and wisdom from yourself, and kind mm-hmm. of hearing yourself talk about a situation, I think you're able to kind of step back a little bit and realize, oh yeah, okay, you know, this isn't okay. Or I don't want to continue right. living this way. So it definitely right. kind of, and it can take time, you know, of course, but I think any steps you can take to get to that place, you know, can definitely help give you that confidence that you need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
well, Jen, this has been good. This has been like a nice, lighthearted conversation on such a very serious topic.
I think
I'm hoping
so,
at least like crack open the door for some.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just us being able to, talk about it and spread mm-hmm. awareness. And I think that's been happening a lot more where people are feeling okay to come out and share their stories, and know that,
absolutely.
That it's okay and get rid of this stigma. And I think as people who aren't going through the situation, but may, have a family member or dear friend that's, you know, going through it, just letting them know, like you say, you know, break down that wall of judgment and letting that person know mm-hmm. that you are there no matter mm-hmm. what.
Exactly.
That's the most important thing. Was there anything else that you want to add that we can talk about that we haven't already? I mean, there's so many things we've covered.
I know, right? I don't think so. The only other thing, I really like the National Domestic Hotline. I would probably definitely start there first. Mm-hmm. I did look just for specifically the city of Chicago. There's a couple things on the city's website. As far as like, you know, shelters, housing, that sort of thing. I think you had a list as well, but it was that there was a specific number for the city of Chicago domestic violence as well. I don't know if they'll have more resources because to be honest, every place that I've went to like nationally always referred to the national kind yes. of, resource. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there may be some, I feel like there'll be more information on the national website, but it's specifically for the city of Chicago. There is a couple as well.
Yeah. And if you Google,
just going to the city of Chicago website,
you know, with your zip code too, there's so many facilities and clinics that come up, even like a Safe Place or places you can go if you need to spend the night or, you know, if you don't have anywhere to go. There are so many clinics and facilities, that, you know, we're fortunate to have the internet, but, you know, obviously the police department or local clinics or doctors, any trusted person, you know, you can turn to mm-hmm. Can definitely be there to offer guidance and help.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to include, the national website in the description. 'Cause this is really great, honestly, for anybody to just yeah. learn more about domestic abuse, to go to this website and read up on it because there's so much mm-hmm. helpful information. So, and of course, too,
I think that thought it was amazing.
I'm going to put your email in this as well. What's your
email? Oh, yes, please. NALLIOWE@gmail.com. So it's my first initial and my last name @gmail.com.
Perfect. And if anybody has any questions, obviously reach out to Dr. Nikki. She is going to be a recurring
guest
on this podcast. But, you know, we just want to be here to be able to help and support you and offer as much information as we can. So I definitely thank you for opening up this conversation because I think it's an important one that we needed to have.
Absolutely. And by any means, always kind of email us if you have any other topics that you think would be good. Again, this one was just inspired by what was recently occurring in the news. So we'll see what the next topic, if no one comes up with anything else.
Yes,
what
exactly.
else we can find to talk about.
And you can email me at gettingzenwithgenz@gmail.com. Anything you want to hear from Dr. Nikki specifically, or any other future topics, obviously I'm always open. This is for you guys. So I want to know anything that you want to hear more about, any information you want to learn about, please do not hesitate and let me know. And you can also go to my Facebook page, Getting Zen with Gen Z, and shoot me a message over there. So we look forward to talking to you guys next time. And thank you so much again, Dr. Nikki, for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.